exactly does it mean to share your hotness? We all have our own unique spark. We are burning out of control like a wildfire, attracting attention, but is it the right kind of attention? All around us are people who are campfires. They don't get as much attention, but their story, their signature spark, their heat that attracts us close to them, those stories need to be shared. On this podcast, we're sharing their stories of resilience, overcoming, how to find joy, happiness, everyday people who found their spark and made their life amazing. Hello, and welcome to this episode of Share Your Hotness with your host, Lita Green, and my guest today, Kat Kennington. And she posted on Facebook stuff, and I was like, that's juicy goodness. So I was like, Kat, you got to come on my podcast. So before we get into the meat of it, Kat, introduce yourself and tell them a little bit about you so that they're all invested when you tell the good, juicy stuff.
Fabulous. Well, I'm Kat Kennington. I am a business growth genius. So I started a business about 8 years ago. It was actually skincare. My sister had developed an amazing wart remedy of all things. And we went to 45 products. 6 years later, I got pushed out of the business as co-founder. It was the saddest thing ever.
And wait, it was your sister.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Ow. Very, very disheartening. Anyways, so, but we grew that business huge for 6 years. It was so much fun and I loved it. And so then I stepped into business coaching and marketing and I started, because I was like, okay, what am I going to do now? I've got to figure this out. Yeah. I've got to make money. You know, I was the main provider at that time and I was just like, what am I going to do? And so, I stepped into doing marketing, social media for other businesses, small businesses. And then I started doing basically just business coaching. Yeah. I coached several businesses and business growth. And, I had a client that I had coached for 2 years. She was a housekeeper. She had an agency. We grew it. It was amazing. She had a team of 10 and her life got turned upside down and she was like, hey, I'm going to close the doors. And I was like, what? No, we grew this beautiful thing. So I just felt prompted to take her business. You know, I bought it from her. And I was like, I went in and I was like, I told my husband, I was like, well, we could run this thing, but if I have to go clean, like when no one shows up, that's going to like suck. I don't want to clean, you know? And so I took it on and I just, you know, because I was like, I felt like I should. And when I did, I realized how much I loved the whole housekeeping gig because I was, my profession at the time was so sedentary. Yeah. And I was like, I want longevity. I want to feel my best. And my best is running around shining homes. And I absolutely love it.
So you know, it's so funny because I have totally like had I don't even know if it's like a midlife crisis or what it is. You know, I just empty nester syndrome is probably the better label for it. But I'm like, you know, all these years I've done what I've done in order to work around my kids. Right. And I've been really blessed with a crazy good career. And so I'm like, I could just make choices about what I want to do. And I've had all kinds of like, oh, I should go do this. And one of the things that I've thought to help keep me in shape is I should do like once a week house cleaning for somebody just because I hate working out.
Yes.
You know? Yeah. I just like walking on a treadmill. I'm like, well, what am I, you know, like what am I accomplishing now? You know? And I grew up, I was a maid from 8 to basically 32. I did other jobs in between, but you know, and so I was like, you know, I should just go and clean someone's house. Then the other day, my daughter who has a house cleaning business, she was not feeling well and she was afraid she was going to let her client down who has 7 children. So I'm like, no problem. I'll go clean for you. So I go clean for her. And she's like, it's a large home. I mean, 7 children, right?
Yes.
And I go clean, and it took my daughter takes my daughter 6 hours. It took me seven because I'm not 19. And I was so sore for the next 3 or 4 days. I was
Yeah.
so sore. I'm like, okay, never mind. I'm not gonna do that. I'm just gonna walk on the treadmill. I don't get sore.
That is a lot of hours. If you could just do like 3 hours and one time a week, it would be golden for you.
Okay, there you go. There you
But
go.
yeah, so I have 5 kids, 3 that are adult, 2 are married. They are amazing children. Like I won the lottery. A lot of people are like, you're just such a good parent. And I'm just like, wait a minute. And then you look at other people and you're like, okay, they're dysfunctional parents. Okay, maybe I am doing something right. But yeah,
Okay,
one
so
thing.
I have a theory, which is a segue. So we're just gonna put a pin in my
Fabulous.
theory of good parents, right? Okay, so while you finish your thing, because everyone can be like, "Ooh, what's the pin? What's the pin?" to segue
Oh,
to a topic. Yeah.
I love it. So, but yeah, I have one that's studying abroad in Puerto Rico. I have a daughter that's serving a mission for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in Spain. We get to go pick her up in
Yes.
5 weeks. I'm like, and we'll take a tour. I have one that is the head water polo coach in our area. And then I have 2, younger kids that are still at home, and they're just amazing. Like every day, I'm just like, wow, what a beautiful family I have.
You
Super
have it
blessed.
all. The which, you know, I was just telling a girl on Facebook, she's got the four little kids, and I was like, don't let anyone tell you this isn't the best thing in the world of being a wife and mom. You know, because society is so into, when my daughter was graduating from high school, I showed her a YouTube that I had just come across of this girl giving the commencement speech at her graduation. And she basically was like, if I ever get pregnant, it'll be the death of all my dreams. And I was like, and then, you know, her whole commencement speech was, you know, the glories of abortion and that she has the right to choose to, you know, to, and I'm like, here's a crazy idea. I'm just gonna throw this out there. It's a crazy idea. If you don't want the result of something, don't participate in it. So if you don't want to make a baby with somebody, don't have sex with them.
Yeah.
If you don't want to have a sore body the next day, don't clean for 6 hours straight. See, I mean, it's just logic that fits in with a lot of things, you know. And to be fair to my it's not just that I'm 50. I do have a degenerative hip, and so it did not like the 7 hours of cleaning. But here's my pin that I put in on good parenting. Because people will say to me, now you have 5 kids. I have 2 living children. So, you know, three total. You know, my daughter passed away when she was a baby, but she's been raised really well. She's already in heaven. She's killing it in life, right? She's doing great. So my 2 that I have left, people always say, oh, you're such a good mom. They're such, you know, blah, blah. And I'm like, no. They listened. They get the credit because you and I have something in common where we might not have had the most intentional parents, right? And why did I turn out okay? And I have 2 siblings that struggle with drugs and addiction. Right? What's the difference? And I think it goes back to individually, we get to decide if we listen to good ideas, good thoughts and feelings, productive thoughts and feelings. And good parents are ones that give kids easier choices of. A array of choices. You know, dysfunctional parents say you can never be better than me. They'll pull you down. They'll, you know, we're not like, you know, something common my mom would say was if you're a kid, you don't have real feelings, right? Like these kinds of helpful, you know, psychological mental health kind of stuff to, you know, you're not good enough for that kind of thing. You know, you're never going to have a good life. No one's ever going to love you. You have a bad personality, blah, blah, blah. So that would be an example of a dysfunctional parent that doesn't think their child can achieve. But good parents give their children tools and information to excel in life and expect them to do better. So, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And so
It's
I'm
like,
guessing you let your kids have choices and learn how those choices felt and gave them good information. So
ooh,
my
I
point
love
here.
that. Ooh, I love that combined together. That's amazing. And I mean, they're, you give them a level of trust and hope they'll be able to make that decision instead of controlling them. Yeah.
Right. Control. You're right. The old battle of do we have the ability to choose, or are we so dumb we need to be controlled?
Oh, yes.
I just want everyone to sit with that for a minute because that is happening in our world today. I'm just gonna
Yeah.
have a little mic drop right there. Boom.
Yep,
Right.
it is
So
happening.
tell us a little bit about your childhood.
Okay, so I grew up in a very dysfunctional household. Poverty. My dad, I don't even know what kind of jobs he would be like, yeah, I'm a counselor, but he really wasn't a counselor. I don't even know, but most of the time he wasn't working. And then my mom sunk into deep depressions. Like she was a very, like I had very loving parents and everything seemed okay until it wasn't, you know. They had a good way of, my dad had a good way of kind of faking it, you know. But he was living a double life. And yeah, it was really sad. So he had cheated on my mom for 7 years. And there was like, you know, and I had no clue until the day he left. And it was my mom, so he told my mom his, and he got his girlfriend pregnant. But he professed Jesus. He seemed like he had such a great love for the gospel of Jesus Christ. And it was just so weird that, you know, his life didn't match up to
Well, hypocrisy is the oldest story in the book. And
that.
I heard a really interesting, I listen to podcasts. I run a podcast, right? But I listen to a lot of psychology or history podcasts. Anyway, this one psychology one, I'm trying to remember what it was called, but basically it said that narcissists have always attached themselves. And I feel like that term's overused because I think narcissism is really just selfish. And once you say, oh, they're a narcissist, it makes it sound like it's a mental condition. They just can't help themselves, right? It's like a pass, but they're just selfish poopers. And the narcissist will attach themselves to whatever system of power is available to them. And so in the 1400s, the only system of power would have been government or religion, right? And so if a narcissist is the closest system of power is this faith or that government thing or this corporation, they're going to attach themselves to rising in that in order to create clout and narcissistic supply. In other words, people who believe them.
Wow. Yeah. I didn't even think about how they attach themselves to power, but
I
that
thought
was.
that was really profound because, I hate that the Catholic Church gets thrown under the bus because there were some pedophile priests. So all the other, Mother Teresa was, like bad. It's like individuals make individual choices, and just because you're a Catholic, you have no ownership of what those priests did. Just like if your father used our common faith in vain. And I believe that when God says, don't use my name in vain, he's not talking about if you use his name with respect. He's talking about, are you using my authority, my name to go forward? That's what that means.
Yeah, and churches are run by imperfect people, you know.
Because there's so few, there's such a short supply of perfect people.
Don't even think it's possible. Well, the
Right,
only
there's
way
only one
to.
of them and they killed him for it. So
Yeah, I
there's
mean,
just
the
a
only.
shortness of supply of perfection, and so we're stuck with using humans. Dang it.
It. Yes, it's so true. And, you know, in the scriptures, it talks about being be therefore perfect, even as my Father in heaven is perfect. And it actually means whole. And the only way that we can become perfect or whole is through Jesus Christ in this life. And maybe it won't even happen till the end, you know?
Well, and then I always think about, like, you know how you see those images of, like, a square block? And the sculptor will, like, be molding it and chipping away to make whatever they're going to make it into. They're, you know, they're making it whole to what it will be, right?
Yeah.
But they're chipping off those little pieces of the square marble, you know, and they're making it into something more. And that to me is like the process of perfection to reveal what I will become.
Oh, I love that. What a beautiful analogy.
I saw a video at one point, or a talk from the LDS Church, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints General Conference. But I remember this imagery of the sculptor chipping away, and it's just always stuck with me. I'm very visual, and I love that, you know, growing and becoming is painful. And, you know, with your dad, you said he had a really good way of, like, pretending. You know, and it's painful and vulnerable to work on becoming a better person.
Yeah, it is. And he definitely ran from that.
Right. And that's what it sounds like, is that he just was like, he could fake it. And then it was all okay until you said it wasn't, you know, his facade, his mask fell away. And so you've got mom with how many kids?
So yeah, we had, they had six kids. Ooh. And it was a lot. And my baby brother was still in diapers, the youngest, when this all went down.
That had been the one girlfriend for all that time, or had there been a series of?
Yeah, there were several.
You know what? I mean, I'm going to put full responsibility for the cheating on your dad, but I'm always like, why do ladies date married men? Did the lady know? Like, why would you want a guy to leave six kids for you? She knew?
Yeah, I think she had her own mental illness going on, you know,
mental,
like,
crazy. Yeah.
She was converted to the church by my dad. You know, he would read her the Book of Mormon on the beach while cheating. You know, I'm just like, it was like a total mental.
Again,
and I don't even know the right word for his mental illness. Like, it just sounds super
and
crazy.
Again, I don't think it's so important to know what the diagnosis is to recognize that those behaviors are not okay.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So there was like a pivotal moment. And I think it's interesting that even though my dad lived this double life and he professed Jesus and it wasn't working for him, that I was still able to find my faith. And that was my ground, right? That was my grounding, was faith in Jesus Christ. And so basically what happened was he told my mom, here's what I've done, laid it all out on the table for her. And she was like, I need to take a minute. And so she left, my dad came in,
She left the room or she left?
She left for just a couple days. She was like, I'm going to go stay with one of my aunts. And it was actually his sister. And just to get things together, clear her mind. And so my dad came, and my dad brought his girlfriend that we.
He brought his girlfriend in that. Whoa.
To our house. Yeah.
Your dad is some crazy pants.
Yeah. And the weird thing is, like, I wasn't told yet that he had cheated.
Did he think he was going to be like some kind of happy polygamist?
No, I don't know. I mean, sometimes you think you can have your cake and eat it too. And apparently he thought that, you know, but
he told himself a story enough times he believed it. Wow.
I know.
Power of storytelling. Yeah.
Yeah, well, everybody's just kind of laughing like, oh, wow, you really believe that. So Yeah, so he brought her over, and we were just, it was really weird. She gave us the biggest hug ever. And I was just like, who's this lady? You know, and he's like, oh, I'm her counselor, and we're gonna go
Oh,
to
so that's what counselor meant. When he was a counselor, he was a sex counselor.
Yeah.
Soon? Too soon?
So
Yeah.
anyways, we had, I don't know where she was at the time, but so me and my sister were just like, my sister had found out, I hadn't, and he was like, we're gonna go to the jacuzzi, like, I don't know, they like left or whatever, but he came back, and me and my sister, we went upstairs, and the, remember the old phones, the rotary phone, like we had one of those with the long cord, and we get on the phone and we're talking to my grandma, his mom, and we're like, our dad's here and he brought this lady and they're gonna go to the jacuzzi together. And he walks in the room, and it was like all of a sudden my loving father had completely changed into a monster. And he grabbed the phone and he's like, you can't go anywhere, you can't talk to anybody. And it, like, I just remember
And his
that.
mother's hearing this because she's still on
Well,
the
he
phone.
grabbed the phone and hung up with her and then told us,
Okay.
like, that was it. And that was the huge breaking point, turning point in my life where I was like,
How
that's
old
it.
were you?
I was 12. I was
Wow.
12. Yeah. And my sister was 13. And I just remember the room, the whole entire house feeling so dark. Like you could cut it with a knife. Like it was so dark. It was like he brought this darkness all of a sudden. It was like, you know, the sheep had turned into the wolf, and I saw it unveiling before my eyes. And so,
Any of us have, and I think it's important to say that any of us have the power to bring the darkness, and we have to choose to not, right? So,
big time. Yeah, his choices had become darkness. And so with the darkness, we were like, what do we do? What do we do? And the only, we had nothing. We couldn't call my mom, we couldn't go anywhere. We were just stuck. So we went into our room, which was super messy. I mean, clothes on the floor, you know, it's like teenagers that don't know how to take care of their room. You know, we go in the room, we sit on the bed, and my sister and I are just like, well, we have nowhere else to turn. And we had a Book of Mormon, and we grabbed that Book of Mormon and we opened it just to receive some comfort and some peace. And a light had come out of that book and filled the room. It had fallen out of the book and filled the room.
now I'm curious, Kat, because I want to go to this, but I want to build the scene just a little bit more. You're 12 years old. What in your life had taught you to turn to scripture in moments of distress?
I had, you know, it's like I remember going to church and some of the hymns, like they would sing the Spirit of God. I would feel the Spirit so strongly in moments like that. Like we would have what you call as family home evening, where you have like a little lesson at home, and we would sing Families Could Be Together Forever, and I would be touched by the Spirit. My faith was ingrained in me at just such a young age. Like I think I came to earth with faith and love for God and for Jesus Christ. And one of my gifts, one of my spiritual gifts is intuition, the spirit of intuition, which we call the Holy Ghost. And I have a constant, he's my constant companion. And a lot of people, they can't really tap into intuition, it's just like not their thing, but they can learn it, you know. But I had always had an asking. I had always asked questions like, what should I do? Where should I go? And when you ask, you know, God, a higher power, he's going to answer. And you just have to listen and receive the answer and then act upon it.
Right. And something I love that you said at the very beginning of this podcast, you said, I'm a business genius. And then you said, one of my gifts is spiritual, you know, intuition. And I think one of the things you just role modeled, and I wanted the listener to hear this, is you're not like, well, I think possibly maybe. You're like, this is what I'm good at. And that's good in your professional life when you put the work in to become great at something, right? But it's the same in our spiritual life, in our personality traits, right? Like when you've leaned into something, it becomes that spiritual gift. It becomes a talent. It becomes a characteristic. And every time you go, oh, well, you're kind of denying that that's something you have, and you're self-gaslighting, self-questioning yourself instead of being like, this is something that I have to rely on.
Yeah. Yeah. And we come to earth with gifts and talents, and that happened to be mine. And I knew, and I felt the spirit of God at a young age.
Mm-hmm. I love how, you know, and you get to write the story, you know, tell me if I'm wrong on this, but you know, like I said, any of us can bring the darkness. It's in there, right? Like none of us are all good or all bad. And that's why labels are so poopy. And your dad might have been someone who was striving for wholeness. And then he made certain choices, and then he worked to cover up those choices. And there's a regression that's happening to the moment where he's, you know, captivating his kids and his poopiness, right? And you know, a lot of times you'll hear people be like, oh, well, and it's like they want to cast this character that they were always a villain, where maybe they were a good person trying, and then they became a person who wasn't trying to be a good person.
Yeah, he definitely came to a point where he was in the darkness himself, where he couldn't even see down the road. I mean, he would make comments to me, you know, that were horrible, that you're just like in front of everybody and not even realize that what he was saying. I mean, it's a horrible sickness. And yeah, when you step into darkness, it's like there's a veil over your eyes and you don't even know what you're doing sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a sister-in-law that mother of five kids, beautiful family. And she started talking about how she wished she had my life. And I'm like, I have two living children. Why would you want my life? Oh, Lita, you know, you get clapped for and you're blah, blah, blah. And you know, you're known, blah, blah, blah. You know, you make all this money or whatever. And I'm like, you know what I would give up? So easily, so quickly to have more kids. And, you know, I didn't know at the time I was talking to a brick wall. But she ended up walking away from her five children, having an affair with this guy who, from all accounts, is a big pooper snot. He's super mean, gets in fights with people, has assault charges against him prior to her dating him. Like, guys, do a background check before you have an affair, okay? Or just maybe not have an affair. But if you're going to have an affair, don't do it with somebody that's penniless and has assault charges. But he lied and told her that he was a millionaire. And anyway, and I saw her the other day, I saw her the other day and it was like, who is this person? You know, it's like not even this person that was one of my dear friends. And it's devastating for all of us because, you know, you still love her and we love her kids and we're angry that she's abandoned her children, you know, and I spend more time with her kids than she does now. And it's like, it would have been really simple. The first time a man flirted with you to go, yeah, no, I'm married. But she let that door crack open. And then it smacked her in the forehead. You know, it's just sad. And it sounds like your dad, who knows at what step, you know, he did that. For my sister-in-law, I can look back and I go, okay, it was about 2016. The door started cracking open, you know, but I wasn't in her head. I didn't know, but I can look back and go, okay, this seed, this seed, this seed, right? Like these little hints, these little things that were said to me. But I worried for her, but I didn't think she would do anything that stupid, because you never think that about the people you care about. But, you know, it'd be interesting. It's interesting when you hear these kinds of stories of people who produce something good, you know, a family like your dad did. He evidently was sitting in church with you guys enough that it got into your heart. And then they just blow up their lives. And everybody around them has to deal with the consequences of that. So back to the story, because I wanted you to lean in for the listener of how did you know to open up the scriptures? Like that's, you know, most kids would, you know, especially with social media, would open up TikTok and start scrolling to, like, you know, self-distract. Right. And yeah, you opened up the scriptures. And again, you didn't have TikTok at the time, but, you know, you could have picked up a book of, you know, a fantasy novel, or, you know, there were other things you could have done to distract yourself from that situation. And instead you went to go seek light.
Yes. And I think, I mean, how many of us are left so alone that there's nothing else you can turn to? How many times in your life have you been in the Garden of Gethsemane, your own Gethsemane? And it's amazing because you really aren't alone. You mm-hmm. may be sitting in your closet crying without for help, and God is there. Christ is there. He has felt your pain. And it's like, when there's nowhere else to turn, that's where you turn, is God. A lot of people do. A lot
right.
of
and
people
I love that you're sharing that so boldly, because I did not have a faith when I was young. I didn't know that God lived. I didn't know that I actually, God was used as a weapon against me, that, you know, didn't love me. I was a disappointment. And so I didn't really have that concept. And yet, you know, I shared experience in my book, Love Me Too, of where I'm being chased by some boys and they have malicious intent. And I discovered God, you know, protected me in that moment. And I tell the whole story. I don't want to take your time to tell it right now, but I love how there's the little Lita and there's the little cat. And we both came to that same conclusion, that God was real. So thank you for adding that witness, as we say in the faith families, you know, that witness that God is real.
Yeah. Yeah. So that experience helped me. It wasn't even something that I look back on and say, that's what made me today. I think it's that daily nourishment. I was taught at, you know, such a young age. I remember as a teenager being so busy working, soccer, doing all these things. But I was taught to feast upon the word of God. And I would come home, be so tired, get my homework done, you know, and just open up the scriptures and try and read them and fill my life with, and because I knew that you have to feed your spirit. You can't just
feed your
body.
I love that you knew that. I love that you knew that. That's so amazing. I love that.
Yeah. And it's such a process. Like, so I just remember, like, my junior, senior year, I was like, I have to feed my spirit every day. I have to do this. This is part of, and fast forward years later, I became a mom, and I had my fourth baby. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to put this to a test. I'm going to stop reading the scriptures. And I'm going to do that for 3 months and see what happens. There was nothing.
Okay, we're going to do an experiment. I mean, most I noticed in my life, when I drift away and then I can be like, why are things so much harder? Oh, I haven't been doing this, but you did like an actual scientific method. Let's do a hypothesis.
I lived a mile from the beach in Southern California. I was I think I was pregnant at the time, or maybe I just had my baby, but there was nothing going wrong. All my three older kids, they were all at school. My house was perfectly clean because, like, I would just clean it in one day, and then the kids would go to school, and I would go walking on the beach for exercise, and nothing was wrong. But literally, it felt like something was wrong. And I was like, oh, there you go. Like, I have the perfect life, but it doesn't feel that way because I decided to not nourish my spirit on a daily basis.
And now you can teach that, because you weren't just a drifter like I've been. You made a scientific method study of. I'm literally sad on the beach in California. If that's not proof, I don't know what is.
Right,
Okay,
yeah.
so you're 12 years old. You're in the room. You said the room filled with light. So go back to the 12 and 13-year-old girls that were there in that room, the room filled with light, and go back to that story, because I keep pulling you off, and I know the listeners going, what happened next?
So we literally just opened up those scriptures, and it was the Book of Mormon, and it literally light just fell out of it. I mean, I don't know how it falls when it's facing up, but in and it literally just filled the entire room with light. And I think sometimes what happens is when we're in such a dark place, and it's not because of our own choices, that God is going to come and he's going to manifest himself to you
Yeah.
give you that comfort and peace, because that was what was happening was crazy. I mean,
And
there was
especially when, like in my childhood, I didn't know anything different in my home. The only way I knew that there was a different way of being was the neighbors, right? The homes around me, their mother didn't yell. They had food, there was order, where you had what you thought was, things were fine. And then it was just this abrupt change. And from what it sounded like, that was the first time your dad ever was that controlling.
Yeah, that I had I it was that I had seen, right? He'd never been that crazy or mean, or it was like, whoa, like it was like a monster.
That you had seen, but yeah, but he, like you said, he was good at faking it because he knew what mask he was supposed to wear, and I'm guessing that he probably didn't like being called out in front of his mom.
Oh yeah, big time. And I think so with all that, like he came from a really amazing family. Like his sister was Miss Orange County. His parents were converts to our church. But he I think it's a lot like what you said. I think it was like C.S. Lewis that said this, like the path to hell, or the road to hell, is a small one. It comes with small steps, and it's a slow one. I think that's what had happened to him. But what he had done is, my mom was amazing too. Like she, and I think this trauma changed her, and just the years of trauma changed her to have a life that is so sad. Like my mom, she's been married 5 times, and this last marriage, she picked a guy that 2 weeks before, or 2 weeks after they got married, he went to jail, and she knew he was going to jail for
Before she
molest.
married him. Oh, for molesting?
So, and my mom is like this amazing person, and we're just like, this doesn't match up, And so we're like, okay, she probably has trauma brain. And it like in my ki like growing up, we had trauma from my mom too. Which is really sad to say, just because she would bring in horrible men into our family's life.
After dad, so they divorced.
Yeah, so they divorced.
And financially, did he support you guys still,
Yeah,
or
it was
did
hard. It was
mom?
yeah, I mean, he kind of it was definitely hard. He only paid like $600 a month in child
Oh, good.
support.
That pays everything. Yeah. So mom has five kids, has
Six
to,
kids,
six
yeah.
kids, has to go back to work. And she keeps picking bad guys.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, it was,
How
oh my God.
quickly did she start dating after the divorce?
Pretty soon. I would say like within a year, you know, maybe longer. But she did have a rebound marriage that lasted a year, and then she got married to the third guy, and
You're
he
like
was,
14.
yeah. The third guy, he came in when I was a junior, and he was our stepfather for 15 years, and he was a good guy that turned bad. It was really sad.
She had a type.
Yes, she had and we keep getting surprised. We're like, what? That it's happening again? Like, is this really her? And then we're just like, wake up. This is really who she is.
So, how did you refine your picker to not copy your mother's picking?
Wow. So just the other day, you know how you have those boxes of stuff that you're just like, oh, these are all my memories. This is everything. Well, we went through the boxes a few years ago, and I had like seven journals in there. And
Love that was your answer. Yes.
I bought the journals on my bookshelf in my living room. And I'm like sitting there, and I'm looking at these journals, and they're like just covered, like all the pages just covered top to bottom. And I was like, maybe that's how I survived my childhood, is I just wrote it out.
Well, if you
I
think about it, scripture is the journal of those that they experience their interactions with God, and they wrote that down. And so their experiences in their life, because they wrote them down, have been able to imprint in a different way in their own mind. Because when we write things down, it does alter how we view those things, even if we never look at them again. And of course, then those stories can be passed down and be shared. And you know, that's what the journals, I think, are personal scripture, right? Because you'd have the ability to go look at what I was thinking, how I was thinking it, and those little miracles, you know, are written down. And so if you compile them with just the miracles, that would be scripture worthy of sharing.
Yeah, I do have to say something about journal writing, is I think it helps you process anything that you're going through is writing. And I think the help that it gave, because one of my journals I actually threw away. I haven't read all of them since, because it is triggering to be like, oh, that was good. But one of them was, I just was cussing the whole time about my mom and how much I hated her. And I was like, what is this? Is the most horrific thing. Like, I literally was like, it was in my when I
But
was
you
in my
let it out as a kid. And you don't
yeah.
need to compile that into your family history, scripture, whatever, you know, but at least you let it out on pages
Yeah.
instead of letting it out in drugs.
Yes. And I think, like, as life went on, you start to create your own family, right? And you're just like, hey, how am I gonna fix any problems that we currently have? It with our marriage, raising your kids, you're like, and I think it was my ability to want to learn. Like, we didn't have the internet readily available in the palm of our hands back then, when I started my family. But as time went on, I had a desire to learn and a desire to grow. And so I took personal development as like something I'm always doing, even to this very day, when you're like, it's like, no, I don't, we're not successful, but yeah, we are. You know what I mean? Like, people
Well,
look at
yeah,
you,
but the thing
wow.
is, I don't know if the internet in the palm of our hands is always a good thing when it comes to problem solving, because you can find rationalization for any behavior or action. The same day that my book, Love Me Too, came out of How to Overcome Sexual Abuse, a pedophile handbook was released. And there's not one or two of these on the Amazon, because I've gone to go look. There is, you can find any rationalization, anything you want. So the question is, how do you find truth? Because we're really in an information tsunami. There's so much information, but not all of the information is beneficial or good. You know, at least when we were kids and we looked up in the encyclopedia, definitions for words or ideas were clear, and we all were working from the same definition. Where now, it's just a tsunami. And how do you know where the fruit is, and how do you know where the trash is? And that goes back to what you talked about earlier.
Yeah.
Intuit or, know the difference.
Yeah. And I think I got excited about developing as a person, developing as a parent. You know, like my kids would throw fits and I'm like, I have to change this. And I would watch Super Nanny every single night. We had one channel that would come through and I would watch it religiously and be like, how is she doing it? And then I would apply it to my family and my parent team. So I was always looking and searching, and the 7 habits of highly effective people, like my mom had her planner and Franklin Covey. She had a testimony of Franklin Covey. And, but I learned the 7 habits, early on in my marriage, and it was such a foundational piece, along with, feeding my spirit every single day with the scriptures, you know, to keep feeding my spirit. And then, about, I want to say 13, 14, 15 years ago, I read The 8th Habit, which a lot of people don't know about. There is an 8th Habit book written by Stephen R. Covey.
I'm like, I don't. And he was in my neighborhood growing up.
No way. So you have to go look that up. And The 8th Habit is about leadership. And I'm like, I want to be a great leader. Yeah, this will be sweet. Well, being a great leader is more about putting a mirror in front of your face and looking at yourself and looking at your whole self. And so he dives into the mind, body, heart, and spirit, and how you can feed those individually to make yourself a better person, a whole person. And so I started applying those principles. It took me a year to read that book because I wanted to apply the things that I was learning. And that dramatic, so the foundation of being in the gospel, feeding my spirit every day, and along with the 7 habits of highly effective people, applying the, you know, that in my communication skills with my husband, to reading the 8th habit and not just studying it and reading it, but actually applying every single principle that he teaches in that 8th habit. It made such a huge difference in breaking the chains of dysfunction in my family. And my kids don't know that. They don't have to see their mom depressed, laying in a bed for days and days. They don't have to see the double life. They don't have to see, you know, my mom's siblings, they're riddled with addiction. They were riddled with addiction. One was a pot farmer in Northern California.
Well, good for him being an entrepreneur.
You know, but he died in jail. Like, how sad.
Yeah. So I have a sister-in-law that I have 2 siblings that are addicts, and I have a sister-in-law that died in a fire of her own making. You know, just another one that died, you know, basically drank herself to death. And, you know, I tell my kids these stories not to horrify them or not to, you know, make my siblings look bad or anything like that, but because the greatest gift I've ever given myself, and I think you'd echo this as well, is to live my life on purpose. and to it has healed so many things in my childhood that I could give my children a mother who didn't yell and hit them. And so now my children will have a template that they can build on and do even better than I did. And, you know, those of us who have to create the template, like what you had to do, you had to undo what the faulty templates you'd been given in your early life, and you did that. You made a study of personal character based in eternal principles that never change or alter. I mean, Stephen Covey, you can find everything he taught. And I actually heard this from Stephen Covey myself because he built a home when I was a teenager in the mountains above my house. And so he ended up being in our church. And it was funny when I was engaged to my husband, he walks in to teach Sunday school class. And my husband's like, and I was like, yeah, that's Brother Covey. You know, he's going to be teaching. And she's like, no, that's Stephen Covey. And I was like, oh yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. He's internationally famous. You know what I mean? Like, because to me, he was, yeah, I knew that he was successful, but we had a lot of impressive people in that ward community, that church community. And that is why I have this faith, is because those people leaned in and took a kid that needed mentors and needed those examples to help create her template. And what I love about your story, Kat, and why I was so excited to have you on, was because we need examples that people are not damaged because of something bad that has happened to them. There's always, even if you don't believe in God, there is always room for personal growth. And if you add God into that, Kat is an example of what you can overcome. And, you know, I put myself humbly forward to that as well. And there are many, and we need to remember that nobody is broken, nobody is cast off. Nobody is so intellectually, spiritually, physically, basically, no one's a permanent victim, because that is a denial of the human character and the atonement of Jesus Christ. Would you not agree, my friend?
Oh my gosh, you said it right there. I mean, that was perfect. I mean, every step that we make, whether on the path to discipleship or the path to success, like what defines success, right? It's goodness, it's light, it's joy. Like I have found happiness. That's hard to do, even when you have like a perfect house. I have a handpicked house that is so perfect. Like I love my home. It has beautiful character. I felt like it was handpicked. I could be sad in this house all day, but I have chosen to, like you said, create a path, not to one by one to badness, to darkness. It's to light.
Yeah.
And that
And you have to do it. You don't fall into happiness.
Some people actually get pretty lucky.
You know what?
But I know.
I think you can have happiness for a time for falling into it, but if you don't know the traits to create it, it will slip through your fingers as easily as it fell in your lap.
Yeah. And I definitely internalized that. I was like, the joy is up to me. It's not up to my husband. He can't make me happy. Right? I'm not going to put that on him. That's not fair to him.
Yeah.
I can find joy through God. He's my partner. Like, whoo. If I didn't have him as a partner, I'm not going to find that inner joy, that true inner joy, not that I'm going to eat a piece of cake and feel happy in that moment, right? And not even remember it 2 weeks later or 2 months later,
Right.
but that solid
Now I'll
foundational.
remember the cake because it stays with me, and that's why I have to work out and why I contemplate being a maid. But you know, I love what you're saying, because your mother, if we make her a character in a book, was looking for a man to help her ha find happiness. And it's a really sad, tragic story, because if her husband had stayed loyal and done other things, she might have been able to have a greater happiness and at some point discover that happiness was within herself. But when we hurt other people, there's a rippling effect of pain that goes out. And yet you, even though it's just one generation different, have not put that on your husband, even though I'm sure he makes you have a lot of joy in your life, but you have not given him responsibility to create that joy. And I just think that's really empowering and a really powerful message that you've created that within yourself with a partner that can never fail us. And that is my witness too, that it's God.
Wow, that I could not have said that better myself.
Well, I just took your story and, just kind of, So
You're
any
like,
closing?
here's the synopsis of your mom. And I'm like, wow, I need to write that down. That was amazing.
Well, the recording will be going live within a couple of weeks. So there you go. Any closing thoughts for the listener, my friend?
Oh, any closing thought? I've been listening to this podcast called All In, by Morgan Freeman, I think. I'm not sure. No, what's her last name? I don't know what it is. But anyways,
I'd like
and
Morgan Freeman. I know him,
yeah,
but
sorry.
he's an actor. Yeah,
Anyways,
anyway, all in. Yeah.
not him, not the beautiful voice that he has. But she asks, what does it mean to you to be all in the gospel of Jesus Christ? And I thought, what does it mean to be all in on anything? I have the opportunity right now to coach water polo for my son's team, the 14U's. And I, so many of them are trying to do too many things. And I'm like, you guys have to be all in on one thing. Like, if you want to be all in on wrestling, go do that. All in on water polo. But when you're not all in, it affects the team. It affects the family. And so if you can choose to be all in, choose what it is that you're going to be all in and do it. Go for it. Run that race and keep going. Because otherwise you're going to be like the waves of the sea and you're going to be tossed to and fro.
Amen. Yeah. Well said. Well said. Well, thank you, listeners. I love this spiritual uplift that Kat has given us today. And for those of you who don't share the common faith that Kat and I have, I hope that you will find whatever scripture you have in your life, that you will let it pour its light into your life. And if it's been a long time since you've picked it up, Kat and I highly endorse the activity. So, thank you again for being on this episode, Kat Kennington, of Share Your Hotness. Thank you for listening. This is Lita Green, and if you have enjoyed our podcast and would like to learn more about the principles that I teach as a speaker, I have a special opportunity for the young girls in your life. So I teach maturation programs. I wrote a book on overcoming sexual abuse, and I wrote a book on confidence. And I've had a lot of parents, I mean, a lot of parents come and say, I would love for your daughter to be, my daughter to be coached by you. But in order for me to coach individual daughters, that would be a lot of money. So I've come up with an idea of what we're going to do. I'm going to do a group mentorship, and you get to come along with your daughter. So I will be presenting principles that you and your daughter are able to go home and have the conversation. So really, you're the coach, but you're being given a conversation opener. So far, I have 8 workshop topics. So if you'd like to have more information about those, they are literally only going to be $40 each. And even better, if you have 2 girls, that's 80. If you have 5 girls or 4 girls or 3 girls, it's 100 per family. I am not doing this to make a ton of money. I am doing this because our girls need to have the information, frankly, that I've been teaching for years. And I want to make that accessible to more than just the one-on-one that come to me and ask for my time as a coach. And because I have to charge money per hour, So this way we're getting it cheaper and accessible, and they can learn with others. And I'm hoping this will be amazing for everybody involved. So let me know if you want more info.